Stop staring at that eclipse and listen to our podcast. I'm Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. And you could do it at the same time. I know there's, of course, rules regarding eye protection, but no reason you can't throw the Barbacast in those headphones and take a listen while you stare at the sun on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. We will be talking about all those injured elbows and recapping the weekend action.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who got Tommy John surgery? Question mark? I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And can you believe Jordan got TJ on both arms?
Yeah, you know, it's funny timing. Good morning, Jake. It's nice to see you. It is Monday, April 8th. I threw a baseball with some effort for the first time in a long time over the weekend as my younger brother David is visiting me here in Indiana. We played some catch. It was a beautiful day over the weekend. And I was like, man, I haven't done this in a while. And I will say, I've never had, again, with my minimal baseball throwing experience, for me, it's always been shoulder, not elbow. My elbow has been pristine.
That's because you throw 72, my dear, dear friend. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we are, of course, going to jump in to the dangerous pool of elbow ligament discourse. A number more pitchers are going to be going under the knife imminently. Shane Bieber, Spencer Strider has UCL damage in his elbow, surgery TBD. Jonathan Elizaga with the Yankees. We have reached the point, it feels like we get here every two seasons, where it's, we need to have a conversation, we need to talk about Bruno, right? We need to talk as a sport, we need to have a conversation about the number of elbow injuries that are going on. We will obviously, as it is Monday, really the first, feels like the first real Monday pod of the season, we will go through all the series that happen over the weekend and give you our thoughts and then a couple little nuggets of news and notes. But let's begin inside the elbow ligament, Jordan Schusterman.
Yeah, let's do that. And, you know, despite the joke at the top, like, let's actually clarify. I know that a lot of people that have listened to this show for a good amount of time do know this, but you are a, I love the phrase recipient, Tommy John recipient. It's like okay. Some sort of award. But as someone who has had their elbow sliced open for somewhat similar reasons to the Major League Baseball players, I think you have some amount of ground to stand on beyond some of the people who have commented on this before. But let's get this. Let's start with an obvious caveat. This conversation can go a lot of different directions. There are so many versions. We could do a whole podcast exclusively about one tiny aspect of this discussion, this topic, this debate, this discourse, which could be pitchers are throwing hard. We could just do 2 hours on just velocity and how we got here and why it is what it is and all those things. Unfortunately, it is not just one topic. It is so many topics. We're going to do our best to distill it. But let me throw it to you, Jake, because as I mentioned, you did receive surgery from the doctor.
Iron this out. So recipient feels silly because like when you are a recipient, it's an award. When I think of recipient, a survivor, you know, as the grandson of a Holocaust survivor, I feel weird dramatic. Being like, yeah, that's way too dramatic. Like, okay, sure. Like I got non-important surgery and I made it through. I would say that Tommy John endurer, that kind of doesn't roll off the tongue. Tommy John haver is silly. Tommy Johnny.
Johnny. Oh, interesting. Anyway, I mean, listen, I'm sure there's other, terminology for this, but you did get this at basically the worst possible time one could be getting this surgery. Now, as we'll talk about velocity, my understanding is you did not get it because you were throwing 100 and ripping 3,000 RPM sliders. But it is a good reminder that the elbow is the elbow. And if you're pitching baseballs, there's a chance you're going to need this at some point.
Yeah. So let's actually just give a little bit more context, I think, for people, right? So the ulnar collateral ligament, which runs down the inside of your elbow, kind of where the elbow bone is, like a little bit closer to the fleshy part, right? It runs kind of all the way down your arm. And The surgery for this, Tommy John surgery, came about, I believe, in the 1970s. Dr. Frank Jobe kind of pioneered this procedure that, allowed to enable the reconstruction of that ligament. And it is called Tommy John surgery because Tommy John was the pitcher who first went under the knife and, you know, had the courage and the survivor mentality. He was the only Tommy John was That's the true. Only Tommy John survivor, if we're really thinking about it.
That's true.
But over the years, as elbow injuries have increased and the science around the surgery has gotten better and the success rate has gotten higher, it has gotten more prevalent in our game to the point that every team loses someone to Tommy John every year. The rehab process can stretch anywhere from 11 months to 18 months. Some pitchers, it takes even longer. It is as someone who got it because his elbow exploded, it is incredibly uncomfortable for the first month after surgery. It is not a surgery that you need to get to live in the world. It should be noted, this is not a torn ACL or a broken femur, right? You can tear your ulnar collateral ligament and live a long, happy life. I opted to get surgery because it hurt me to do a push-up, and boy, do I love a push-up. And so that's why I got it. I do think that history, that context is relevant when discussing kind of how we got here. But let's zoom in into this current moment, Jordan. Why have elbow injuries returned to the discourse today, Monday, April 8th? Why are we talking about this at this current moment?
Yeah, I mean, when you lose, it's, to me, a lot of it is the optics more than the numbers changing that much this year versus last year or the year before, right? When you lose Spencer Strider to elbow issues, when you lose Shane Bieber, who, seemed to be on the comeback trail from elbow issues after last year, was looking better than ever. When you lose high profile guys, when you're already dealing with pitchers who we thought to be durable, like Gerrit Cole, like Lucas Giolito, and you realize that no matter what kind of pitcher you are, no matter what your arsenal is, no matter how hard you're throwing, right? There is risk in this endeavor, which is throwing baseballs a lot at the major league level, trying to get major league batters out. And unfortunately, because this is such a sensitive topic, understandably, what we have is a kind of a desperate grasping from all sides of saying, this is the end. This is the problem. This is what we have to change. And the really difficult thing is that no matter what you think is the biggest issue, whether it's the pitch clock, whether it's velocity, whether it's spin rate, whether it's pitchers throwing year round, whether it's what pitching is now prioritizing in terms of how we get major leaguers out, there's not one answer to any of those questions. And so instead, we've now arrived at a place where all of the involved stakeholders, whether it is the actual pitchers, whether it is the teams that employ them, whether it is the union, and we're going to get into that in a second, whether it is the actual teams, the league that is trying to speak and say, hey, yeah, obviously we don't want our best pitchers to get hurt, but also there are things that we've done that have probably pushed us in this direction as well, and we can get into some of that. Again, as for which stakeholder we go to first and talk to and listen to, I think to me it's okay, let's listen to the pitchers. But it's not that simple. It's not that simple. So where do you want to begin in terms of how the discourse has exploded? Because the fact that we have official statements going from the league and the PA is, I think, an important one.
I think you're right. Right. We have high profile players getting hurt. The uptick this year, this is a continuation of a trend. 2024 is nothing new in this regard. I think that is important to understand it. Between Cole and Bieber and Strider, I mean, those are three of the, and Eury Pérez, right? Those are three of the 20 most talented pitchers in the world, even. Yeah. And so that's why it is a story right now. I want to begin with the pitchers because I think what's super important to understand is that everybody's acting in their own best interest and is playing by their own incentives. And how we got to this point where pitchers are throwing this hard and getting hurt all the time, it pays. It pays, right? You have Spencer Strider is a great example of a guy who was a fourth round pick and, was supposed to be a reliever and was able to hold his stuff deeper into games because he's a very meticulous trainer and smart guy and did a lot of work and is blessed with an incredible physique and body and arm. And he was able to parlay that into a $75 million contract. Now, Spencer Strider today is probably pissed that he's not going to pitch for a while. Duh. But he made more money by increasing his velocity than he would have probably otherwise. And similar thing for Shane Bieber, who, if he was on another team, probably could have signed an extension, but has already made, I believe, around $30 million as a fourth round pick. And I think that if it's a difficult ask, right, from the league's perspective, the league is insinuating that we want you to throw softer so that we have more balls in play and a more entertaining product. And maybe the pitch clock is helping with that. But for players, the risk is still worth the reward. Still worth the reward. Yeah, okay, your elbow explodes and there's a 3% chance that you never get back to what you were, 5% chance you never get back to what you were. It's still worth the risk if you're talking dollars and cents. And so In order for those incentives to change for players, like something within the structure has to be different because, like, think about if you're a guy in double A and you're throwing 92, okay? Your best shot at being a successful professional baseball pitcher is to go to Driveline or some comparison thereof and figure out if you can to throw 97, even if it means your UCL is going to turn into spaghetti in 3 years, because that's going to get you to the big leagues. And that's what it's all about. And so I don't really blame pitchers in any way. You can't do that.
Yeah, and I think, again, when we start looking around to a lot of very good pieces being written, whether it's research pieces, whether it's opinion pieces, I think what Ben Lindbergh wrote for The Ringer last week was fantastic, very thorough, if you want a full rundown of kind of how we got here. But I especially appreciated hearing from someone like Justin Verlander, because if you asked me, man, who is someone that, in terms of a pitcher, who would really be able to speak on this? And for someone who has been through it all, his career has spanned the beginning of when, you know, we've seen versions of this where at the beginning of his career it was like, of course, we're going to go as deep into the game as possible. And then he himself had to adjust later in his career. Now, of course, he was capable of doing it physically. He is a Hall of Famer. He's one of the best we've ever seen. Justin Verlander, who, by the way, these comments, these were tweeted out by Ari Alexander, who's a reporter in Texas. I know he's on his way back from, you know, a shoulder injury, and he rehabbed in AAA recently, and he spoke after the game about this. And Verlander spoke about how the game changing late in his career, he realized, like, listen, I need to be emptying it out more because I need to get more swing and miss because, oh, by the way, this gets back to the league issue. If the balls are flying out of the yard a little bit more than they were 10 years ago, what are pitchers going to want to do? They're going to want to miss bats. And now you're incentivized in a way. It's not just, oh, it's cool to throw hard. Oh, it's, you know, velocity is good. If I'm trying to avoid home runs, I'm trying to avoid opposite field, you know, goofy homers, I got to miss the bat. And if that's going to mean that I have to rip a harder slider in the second inning than I normally would, if that means I have to throw at max effort than I normally would, he's going to have to adjust. And Justin Verlander, what happened to him? He was basically durable for 15 years, and then he suddenly needed to get Tommy John. Now, that might just be a situation where, as you read anybody that writes about the UCL, it's probably going to happen at some point. So that might not necessarily be a cause of what, you know, the game changing and whatnot. But listening to Verlander talk about that, yeah.
There's no direct cause and effect for any of these injuries. Like, we can't say, oh, well, you know, he's added this pitch or his velocity ticked up this start and then his elbow exploded. We don't know. There's so many compounding factors to each of these. And, like, I'm not saying that you said that, but, like, it is just so important to understand that you can't draw a direct line yet. Like, we just don't have the research there.
Sure. Sure. But while there's absolutely still randomness involved, because you can find pitchers who have had funky arm slots and crazy velocity and have never gotten hurt. Of course, you can find examples for all of that. We are still at least pushing towards answer, and we're asking enough of the right people, the literal surgeons who are doing these surgeries all the time, whether it is James Andrews, whether it is Neil Elitrosh, whether it is Keith Meister, like, these guys are speaking out. And, you know, these are the people I am going to probably listen to before either the league or the players, because these are people who are going in there and saying, yeah, this is the guy that's And this is the guy that I most frequently see end up in my operating room is the kid that has been throwing this much or this hard and has been chasing that. And you know, reading these quotes from James Andrews, who of course has seen this too from the actual surgery side of things, I just thought this was fascinating. And of course, all these guys have been interviewed so many times. So this is excerpted from, again, now this is, it's like, you know, MLB is doing not just research on this, but they're interviewing these doctors. I thought this quote from James Andrews was really interesting. So since they started following the injury patterns, injury rates in the year 2000, back in those days, I did about 8 or 9 Tommy Johns per year in high school, age year younger. The large majority of Tommy Johns were at the major league and the minor league level and the college level and just a handful of high school kids. In today's situation, the whole thing is flip-flopped. The largest number is youth baseball. They've surpassed what's being done in the major leagues. Then he goes on to say the ligament itself can't withstand that kind of force when kids are throwing 90 miles an hour in high school. We've learned in our research lab that baseball is a developmental sport. The Tommy John ligament matures at about age 26. In high school, the red line where the forces go beyond the tensile properties of the ligament is about 80 miles an hour. Now, obviously, it's still not black and white with what he's saying there. And we've seen guys throwing 90, 95 in high school that make it to the big leagues before they blow out. However, this is going back to the Yuri Perez news that we just got recently. I mean, yeah, it's hard not to hear, or like high schoolers now, I follow the draft closely. I'm seeing juniors throwing 96. I'm like, that's cool. That doesn't make me feel good. You know, that doesn't make me think that he is going to be a successful pitcher. It makes me think of guys like Ronel Blanco, who just threw a no hitter, you know, who signed for $5,000 at 18 because he probably wasn't trying to throw 95 miles an hour when he was 15, 16, 17. And by the time he was kind of getting into his physical prime, he was in a much more reasonable space to be throwing baseballs. And so all of these things combine to end up in a situation where how do we actually reverse this trend and move in a safer direction? And I don't know, that's really difficult.
So let's fold the pitch clock conversation into this, because this, you know, is layered on top of it, because there is a belief among some players that the pitch clock implementation last year played a role in pitcher injuries because it allowed pitchers less time to recover in between each pitch. This year, the pitch clock, I believe, what, another 2 seconds was kind of cut off with runners on base from 20 to 18 seconds. And the MLB Players Association issued a statement along the lines of, you know, the pitch clock has MLB's unilateral implementation of the pitch clock for 2024 has had some negative result in regards to elbow injuries. I don't have the statement in front of me. I probably should. But I assume
statement. You know, I can read it here. And this is, again, from Tony Clark. He says, despite unanimous player opposition and significant concerns regarding health and safety, the commissioner's office reduced the length of the pitch clock last December, just one season removed from imposing the most significant rule change in decades. Since then, our concerns about the health impacts of reduced recovery time have only intensified. The league's unwillingness thus far to acknowledge or study the effects of these profound changes is an unprecedented threat to our game and its most valuable asset, the players. So the first part of that statement, which is the most significant rule change in decades, is accurate. That is true. They put through the most significant rule change in decades. It worked. The players themselves will tell you this was a good change. All of that, it happened, right? But then MLB was like, oh, we can just add a little bit more. And the players have no way to stop that. And so they added a little bit more. But then the last paragraph, the league's unwillingness thus far to acknowledge or study the effects, that is the part where does not actually appear to be the case, because MLB in their response cites a study that is yet to be published in the peer review stage from Johns Hopkins University that is directly covering this. And through Ben Lindbergh's reporting and all this reporting, the league is very much looking at this. Now, what that actually means and what that is actually going to lead to, again, this is not going to be resolved anytime soon, but it does seem like the league is looking into this. And unfortunately, the pitch clock is now center stage as like an easy thing to point at and be like, clearly that's what's making things worse. But as we just said, this has been an issue for 10 years now. It was an issue long before we even knew the pitch clock was ever going to be a reality in Major League Baseball.
I also think that any research being done by the league is going to have some sort of, you know, implicit bias with it, where the league wants to do everything they can to implement the pitch clock, and they want to do everything they can to keep player salaries down. And so that is a part of the story. And I personally believe Jake Mintz, sitting here right now, who is not receiving money from the union or the league, I believe that the pitch clock has very little to do with elbow injuries. That's, again, that's not based upon research I've done for decades. I want to be very clear. Like, you should listen to what I just said and say, okay, cool, that's another data point. Let me go read a peer-reviewed study. Or don't. But I think that the league unilaterally implementing the pitch clock for this season without doing any research on the effects of that after last season is a bad decision and potentially harmful. And the union has every right to be ticked off about that. I also think it is somewhat, I don't want to use the word irresponsible, but like, I think it is somewhat short-sighted of the union response, like Tony Clark's statement, to draw a connection between these two things. Because I do think there's a legitimate argument that the new, you know, shorter, even shorter pitch clock is a bad thing. And the way it was implemented is bad, but I don't know if it's connected. And I have some skepticism about the connection there. And I think most people you talk to will believe that too. And before we have any hard evidence on that, I'm skeptical to admit it. But again, like, the union is completely within their rights to be ticked off about the new pitch clock. Like, I don't have any issue with that at all.
Sure. But even again, though I like the pitch clock. Yeah, yeah. And I think players do too, right? And I think that when we zoom farther out, that is what is so troubling about this exact moment and why we're talking about this and why we have to talk about the back and forth between the league and the players is because any hope of solving this, which isn't really solving anything, but is at least mitigating or at least progressing towards a healthier position for the sport when it comes to pitcher injuries, is going to involve significant collaboration and understanding from both sides, which, as you can tell from the tone and some of the interactions between the league and the players recently, we are not in a great position to have those conversations, which clearly need to be had from both sides no matter what. And so that is what is most concerning for me as I sit here on this Monday morning and look ahead at the treacherous road of trying to figure this out, is before we can even, not to mention that the solutions are complicated and challenging enough on their own, it's the fact that the stakeholders involved are already at odds over so many parts of this that makes me concerned that it is going to be very difficult to accomplish it. Now, at the same time, as I think all the research goes, and I think that, again, you listen to Verlander talk about this, you listen to doctors talk about this, this issue goes so far beyond Major League Baseball. Now, Major League Baseball is the top, that is the pinnacle, it is what people are trying to get to, and it is inspiring a lot of younger pitchers to try and throw harder, to try and spin the ball and all these things. But again, this is a massive issue that expands beyond the scope of what is happening with the however many Major League Baseball pitchers there are. And so that's something that is also makes it daunting to know where we go from here.
And that's why I have all my little leaguers throw underhand, Jordan. But I mean, there is an element here also, right? Like, arm injuries are the cost of doing business. This is baseball. The human body was not built to throw a ball overhand and snap that ligament at full force over and over and over again. There will always be arm injuries in this sport. That is not a bug. It is a feature. It is an unfortunate one. Now, I do think that, like, the goal is not a realistic goal for elbow injuries is not zero, right? There will always be some of them going on. However, it is undeniable that we have reached a point where it is a drag on the quality of the experience of being a fan because, you know, why do we care about sports? Why do fans fan, right? If you are a Yankees fan, connecting yourself emotionally to the success of someone like Gerrit Cole is the experience. That is the point of it, right? And so if your favorite pitcher can just miss a year at any time and we're like, well, that's how it goes, that sucks. And anything that we can do to lessen the frequency of that type of thing happening is beneficial to everyone involved. However, like you, Jordan, I am incredibly skeptical that we're going to get anywhere anytime soon because not like we cannot agree on a problem, let alone figure out the solution to that problem, right? And so we are further away from fixing this than we should be. I mean, we put a man on the moon. You know, we put Hawkeye in all these stadiums, right? We should be able to figure this out, you know?
well, no, that's the thing. Like, to your point, I mean, we need to figure out the problem first. And I do think that there are efforts being made towards that, but they're going to need to involve a lot more than what we've seen. But to your point, like, listen, exactly right. Why do we like this? We want to watch the players. We want to watch the best players. We want to watch the best pitchers, and pitchers are half the players, right? And so that's what we want to see. But also, it's why, listen, not that this is at all important, but I've been thinking about this for years. It's why when we're doing picks and awards picks, it's like, what am I supposed to do with picking Cy Young? What am I supposed to do with pick? It's completely impossible. It's completely impossible. And when we say it's easy to wave off and say, if they stay healthy, yeah, that's true. You can apply that to all sports, and you can apply that to all analysis and whatever. But like, truly, when you have this amount of drastic, when we're talking about the pitchers at the pinnacle of the sport, the best pitchers that can make the biggest difference on their team, and that their availability is completely impossible to predict, well, then how am I even supposed to say anything with great certainty about what is going to happen, which I already don't do. I just like to watch and analyze in the past, right? But that's why it adds a whole other layer that's just like, how can we even pretend like we know what's going to happen at this point?
No one's like, oh, yeah, I'll take Mahomes for MVP if his elbow stays together. Like that, we don't do that, right? You know, so it is a very bizarre thing. Jordan, let's take a break. And when we get back, we will run through all the happenings from the weekend that was in baseball, touch on a couple of those specific injuries maybe and how they impact their teams moving forward right after a break. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It is Monday morning, an underrated day. Monday's underrated, okay? You got to look at it. You got to look at Mondays with a positive glass half full. That's a sentence. Because Mondays offer new life, Jordan. It's a new week, a chance to look back on the weekend that was, prepare for the week that will be. And so let us turn our attention behind at the series that were over the weekend in baseball because we had a mop. So take that mop, dip it in some wet, you know, dirt water, add a little soap to it, throw that thing on the floor because it's mop time.
And we'll see how many times the White Sox suffer a mop this year as the Royals taking all four from Chicago. And listen, the White Sox are in all likelihood the worst team in baseball. I think they are the front runner right now for the worst team in baseball.
Look,
I know the Rockies and back. Yeah, what is the phrase for that? The Royals, meanwhile, while taking four from the worst team in baseball is, you know, let's not get too excited. They look good, particularly their pitching, their starting pitching, which they completely, you know, overhauled this winter with the additions of Lugo, with the additions of Waka. Of course, we've been excited about Cole Reagans, with what Alec Marsh has looked like. With what, like, this is with, you know, Brady Singer, like, this is looking like at worst, a good pitching staff, at best, a very good pitching staff. Now, their bullpen has not been as good. The offense, I still have a lot of questions about, you know, we've seen some, of course, Bobby Witt's looked tremendous. Melendez has looked really good. Renfro, again, I know you're questioning that the moment they signed it. He hasn't looked as good. He's had some good defensive plays. Our beloved Vinny Pasquantino, he has had an extremely slow start to the season. But hey, Royals, you got my attention. You got my attention. This is what you should do if you're playing the White Sox. You should take care of business at home. You should take all four, and they did that.
It is. Do I believe the Royals are good? I don't know. It's April 8th. However, this series tells me that they are definitively better than the White Sox. And that in and of itself, while is a given, kind of, is not a given because that was not the case a year ago. So the Royals have separated themselves from the basement and they are on the first floor of the house getting higher and higher. The one thing for the White Sox that is going to help them become the worst team in baseball, Luis Robert Jr., hurt already.
Yeah, and Garrett Crochet had some quote after the game. He looked amazing again, by the way, and he was like, you know, we're all gonna have to start picking it up. Like, we all got to look inside and be better, and like that includes me. I'm like, Garrett Crochet, you are doing your job. It is not your fault that the rest of this team has been built to lose. So you just keep going out there and shoving every fifth day. We will enjoy it. We will support you. We will see you at the All-Star game. But otherwise, I hope you can get your realistic expectations for the summer that is about to ensue.
You are not going to be good. And that's okay. Jordan, just quickly on Luis Robert. During the fantasy draft, the Baseball Barbacast fantasy draft, much was made over my decision to select both Luis Robert Jr. and Royce Lewis. And I poo-pooed everybody and said, oh, these injury-prone guys, they can't get hurt again. And it is, again, it is April 8th, and they are both on the IL. Maybe we'll do a little.
Hitters can get injured, too.
Hitters can get injured too. Maybe we'll do a little fantasy baseball check-in at the end of the show. But that was fun. Just both of those guys hitting the aisle right away. Yeah. It's a shame because they're absolutely electric to watch. Okay, sweeps. The Braves taking
Only one real sweep.
Yeah, only one real sweep. The Braves over the Diamondbacks. The Braves came back from 6-0 on Saturday. I believe they also came back on the Friday night game in the opener after Spencer Strider was bad and then revealed to be hurt. The Diamondbacks bungled the Friday night game with some horrible defense. Blaze Alexander looked out of his element at shortstop, did not look comfortable. The Braves have now, this offense is just comically good, but the Braves have reached Los Angeles Dodgers levels of inevitable win at home vibe. Is good because they are, I still believe, better than the Dodgers.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a totally fair assessment. Their offense has just been laughably good. And for Arizona, I mean, look, I expressed some concern about the bullpen. I know Sewald got hurt, but remember, it was an interesting decision to change absolutely nothing about this bullpen after their miraculous, playoff run. And that's looking like maybe a questionable decision so far. I don't really know what the reinforcements are going to look like there, but we'll see.
So, and let's just chat about the Braves rotation for a second, because I do think it is relevant and important with Strider being out for an extended period of time, almost certainly. So now their top four is Max Fried, Chris Sale, Charlie Morton, and Reynaldo Lopez, who is just a starter, just going to have to be a starter. The fifth spot, I mean, that's still a pretty good rotation if those guys stay healthy.
Yeah.
The big if.
Fried obviously Strider, hasn't looked good yet, but yeah.
Right. But with Strider going down, he was, in theory, the most dependable guy compared to Fried, who missed an extended period last year. Sale is 35. Morton is 40. Reynaldo Lopez hasn't really been a starting pitcher for a while. And so losing Strider, I mean, I don't want you to listen to this baseball podcast and have Jake and Jordan be like, you know what's important is the Braves losing Spence Strider. That's really, like, no freaking duh. But somebody is going to have to step up when it comes to their starting pitching depth, whether that's calling up a top prospect like AJ Smith-Shaver. Bryce Elder is probably, I would imagine, going to get ascended to the big leagues, and he'll fill some of that time. He was an all-star last year and looked pretty ass in spring training and down the stretch last year. The Braves are still the best team in this division. I'm not worried about them. But if Strider is out for the year, it opens the door just a peep for the Phillies.
And let me say, last thing on the Braves, Jared Kelnick looks fantastic. Hope you're enjoying it, Braves fans. A fake sweep happened in Minnesota as Cleveland took the two of the three scheduled games against the Twins. The Sunday game was rained out, so the Twins did not win a game this weekend, but calling it a sweep is kind of goofy. Cleveland has their home opener against who are they playing today? They have their home opener today, their Eclipse home opener, which got moved back because the sun will be blocked. The White Sox, that's good. That's exactly who you want to have come to town for your home opener. But for Bieber, okay, so Bieber's out. Now, this is honestly even more shocking in some ways because it was like, damn, he was looking better than ever. They already have Gavin Williams down because he's dealing with elbow issues. So Bybee, Logan Allen's looked really good. Bybee McKenzie, who didn't look super awesome in his first game. Again, this is another one where we thought this was a clear strength of their rotation. And the offense has certainly looked better than we maybe expected. But for them, I'm curious who the next man up is going to be. For them, obviously, they have Carlos Carrasco is still in the mix there. But I'm curious what the next guy is there. Now, they have, obviously, they always have a lot of pitchers at the AAA level that we can expect to see. But Joey Cantillo's hurt also. Obviously, Espino's not in the mix. We're going to start seeing some depth guys for Cleveland that you probably didn't expect. And I'm sure one of them will be way better than you thought.
Jaime Barria is lurking in this organization. Mm-hmm. So don't be surprised if he comes up and just is totally fine. Okay, so those are our fake sweeps and sweeps. Let's go to our 2-1 series wins. The Pirates taking 2 out of 3 from the Baltimore Orioles in Pittsburgh. The Pirates, you can believe Pittsburgh. They've never done this before. The hot starts are always real. Sorry, I'm not trying to rain on the parade. But the Buccos are indeed 8-2 in their first 10 games of the season. I am still waiting to see how good the Pittsburgh Pirates are. I think, call me in mid-May. They're definitely, I feel more confident about them, however, right now than I did at this time last year. Where are you at on the Pirates, Drew?
Yeah, I think I'm about there. I'm still trying to figure out how this pitching staff is shaking out. You know, they have on paper, you know, Chapman has been good. Bednar has been pretty good. And like, I got to say, you know, those veteran lefties like Marco Gonzalez looks really solid, which is not shocking. I think a healthy version of him can be super helpful. There is no way Bailey Falter is going to be in this rotation much longer. I think Skeens is going to replace him by the end of the month. That's not reporting. I have to imagine that when you have that obvious of an upgrade just lurking, and if you're still in the mix there, I just think that he's going to replace him soon. And so that's one thing, but the offense, we're still kind of waiting to see how it shakes out as well.
Michael A. Taylor has looked unbelievable. You were screaming all winter long, someone sign this guy. Yep. He's looked superb for them. Yep. One thing about the Orioles, you know, they could have won all three games. The Pirates, both of their wins were walk-offs. Okay, which on one hand, you're like, well, the Orioles are in these games, that's a good thing. On the other, it's a great reminder that the best relief pitcher in baseball last year, Felix Bautista, is out for the year with Tommy John, and he transformed everything the Orioles were able to do in the back end of games, and not having him is a big deal. Yennie Cano blowing the save up 1 in the bottom of the 9th on Sunday. It's like, you don't want to be like, well, Felix Bautista would have saved it, but like, he probably would have.
Yeah. But I will say, so far, though, the Orioles pitching has not been the problem. Yeah. The offense has looked really good in the first weekend. Obviously, it's been a little bit cooler since then. But it's fine. You know, Orioles 5-4. Pirates, just keep rolling. Keep winning. You got to build up as definitely, because it's gonna come crashing out at some point. So at least you can get bank as many wins as you can before reality sets in.
The Phillies taking 2 out of 3 against the Nationals in D.C. No surprise there. The Phillies offense still kind of stuck in first gear. Slow starts from Stott, Turner, Bohm, Castellanos. Johan Rojas has a -40 OPS plus. I know it's April 8th.
The Rojas thing is tough, right? That's a great example of, you have all these, and it's not anyone, like, he spends all winter taking more swings than everybody. He's getting every at bat, he's getting as many at bat. It's just like, look, he just might not be a good hitter. It's 8 games. I'm not going to bury him. Maybe he's making these adjustments at the major league level, but my expectations for him were still very low. If he can play great center field, fine. But when the rest of the lineup is struggling, it makes it that much more difficult. Bryce looks great. Otherwise, we're still kind of waiting for them to get going.
The one thing that's worth mentioning, JT Realmuto had one of the worst years offensively of his career last year. Spent a lot of time in the offseason doing hitter drive line, which doesn't explode your elbow. And he looks like a different hitter so far this year. The bat speed is definitely up. He looks more dynamic. However, 5 stolen bases. The Nats stole 5 bags against JT and the crew on Sunday. Now, JT is still like elite pop time. And I think this is more of who started on Sunday? Christopher Sanchez, I think. It's probably more of an issue with the pitchers not being able to hold runners on. But anytime you steal 5 bags off of Realmuto, like, that's worth a little bit of introspection.
And it, the pop time was there, but the caught stealing rate took a sharp hit last year. Obviously, that's, stealing's easier across the league. We've yet to see him fully make that adjustment yet. That is going to be an interesting thing to watch. But for him to, you know, look a little bit more resurgent on offense is definitely a big deal. Let's stay in the NL East with the New York Mets, who got a series win in Cincinnati. I did not attend any of those games, for people wondering, but the Mets squeaking one out. They finally get a series win here. Their offense is just not. Lindor finally getting going at the end of this series. He's obviously been cold. They currently have the 30th ranked team OPS in baseball at 575. They are now going to Atlanta for a four-game set where they will face the team with the number one ranked OPS. And they will not have JD Martinez, who apparently is not quite ready to join the team yet. But so far, the pitching has actually been pretty good. That's what has been kind of keeping them afloat, is in some ways. Now, they've had some rough patches in the bullpen, but for the most part, the pitching is keeping them in it, and the offense is going to have. So in that sense, you know, you got to be kind of optimistic. At the same time, the Braves might, you know, suck the soul out of them here over the next week, and we might be back to just doom and gloom. So we'll see how they survive here. You know, they're 3-6. Going to Atlanta is a tough road, but, you know, we'll see if they can keep it going, balance it out a little bit, get the bats going.
I am curious about the pitching. I generally believe when you have like a quote unquote smart front office rolling into town, they're usually able to just find outs. I think finding outs is easier than finding runs. And so
interesting. Mm-hmm. I think I agree with that.
Not in college baseball. Very much the opposite in college baseball. 100,000% true. So yeah, I and we'll talk about this with the Red Sox in a bit. Like, we should maybe have taken the over. Like, I will always take the over on the Yankees relief pitchers, because I just believe that group knows what it's doing to get outs in those spots. And so far, obviously, very early returns. I'm curious if we see a similar situation with the Mets and the arms that they brought in.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I was super high on the Manaea signing, and he's looked tremendous. So that one I was super bullish on. So that's been really good. Quickly on the Reds, they're just trying to figure out, you know, what they are. So many young players. Steer looks amazing. Everyone else is still kind of finding their footing this year. Of course, they're also still dealing with some injuries. So we'll see. Milwaukee is coming to Cincinnati this week, so I'll be there for a couple games, and we'll get a closer look at them. But let's stay in the AL. Let's go to the AL East here. Jake, I know you did not attend any of these games in the Bronx for the home opener, because you still had some familial obligations this weekend. But Yankees looking pretty good. They're looking pretty good.
They're good. The Yankees are good. Are they great? We'll see. Are they bad? I don't think so. Time will maybe prove me wrong. But there's enough here on the offensive side. I think my biggest worry with them going into the year was, who's the third best hitter on this team after Judge and Soto? And I think the early returns are Stanton looks better. He looks better early. He looks a little bit more athletic and trimmed down. I mean, maybe we're going to get a Giancarlo Stanton hamstring pop news alert in 25 seconds. We'll see. But the one I'm really excited about is Anthony Volpe. Like, he, I think that we as an industry, like, the kid was 22 last year, right? And he was kind of an offensive nothing for a lot of the year, especially in the first half. But again, he was 22. And so if Anthony Volpe, who has been spectacular so far this season, is like an 870 OPS guy, I would not be surprised.
I mean, that would be.
I mean, that's pretty high. Let me take that back.
Right. No,
let me take that back. 820. Like, if he's in a well above average hitter, that is a huge deal for this team and totally doable.
Yes. And I just highlighted Volpe when I wrote last week just about, you know, hitters that were impressing early on. You know, his season last year could be anything that you wanted it to be, because he was a Gold Glove shortstop as a rookie and he went 20-20. He also, like, no matter how you slice it, he was a bad hitter. He had the second worst OPS or OBP among all qualified hitters. You know, the WRC plus was in the bottom 10. What was extra weird, but I forgot, was that he was amazing in August and then horrific in September. So, like, even his second half was completely uneven. He, you know, made some swing changes, some stance changes. It seems like he looks great. I agree with you. And it'll be interesting to see where he is in the lineup, because that's the kind of player that I'm really curious to see if we keep him down in the bottom half, or if he somehow makes his way up, because it's going to be tough to crack the top of this lineup for any of these guys because of the veterans that they have at the top. But he has looked great, and it's been very good to see. I agree.
I just think that Anthony Volpe is a good baseball player. Like, I think he is a very good baseball player, and I think that he was playing at age 22 season. And now he's going to be better. Like, for me, it's that simple. But the Yankees as a whole, losing the first game on the home opener against the Blue Jays on the Hello Juan Soto day. There was some discourse online about roll call and whether or not the Yankees fans doing roll call is good or cool or not. And I think that even if you are a Yankees hater, like, I have no problem with people being a Yankees haters. Like, it makes sense. Okay. I think the roll call rules. Like, I think it is unique. I think it is special. I think it is singular. And just like that type of moment of Juan Soto doing the first roll call, always cool, built into the experience, something to look forward to. Same thing with Volpe last year, right? When he came up, it was like, what's he going to do for the first roll call? I love that moment that Yankees fans and players get to have. Two thumbs up.
Totally agree. Listen, all kinds of things we can make fun of Yankees fans and the Yankees for. No shortage. You don't have a roll call. I like it. Thumbs up for me. You know what you can make fun of? The fact that they lost that game. That's funny. go with that. The fact that they haven't been to the World Series in however many years. Like, it's fine. There's plenty of things you can get on them for. Let them have their roll call. It's fine.
I have Little League kids who've never seen the Yankees win a World Series. That's very funny. They're like almost real people now. They haven't seen it.
Yep.
But roll call is good. Speaking of premier franchises in our sport, let's head out to Colorado, where the Rockies had their home opener. And the Rays took 2-3 from Colorado. Colorado winning just a bizarre game on Friday with a walk-off grand slam. And like, it was so messy. Horrible umpiring in that game. Pete Fairbanks, the Rays closer, complaining about the balls. Whatever. But the moment for me that was important here, Rockies fans booing Chris Bryant.
I don't know. Again, we're generally going to be anti-boo in like 99% of situations. I know Chris Bryant, you know, had some quotes after, like, I've seen it all. I've dealt with everything. Fortunately, you know, Chris Bryant has seen it all and been through everything. And he's going to take this in stride relatively. But Chris Bryant is not the problem. Is he the solution? No. But it's one of those situations where it's like, he becomes the proxy for like what's wrong with the team, which is not fair at all. But because you're not allowed, you don't have the opportunity to boo the ownership or boo the front office, you're just going to boo the highest paid player who's not playing very well. That's kind of that's what fans are stuck with. Now, the one hand, I can understand and appreciate Rockies fans showing their discontent.
But that's what I want to say. Chris Bryant is an unfortunate recipient of the booing. Yes. I think, however, it is a load that he will need to bear because he is getting paid handsomely to do that. And to see spice from the Rockies fan base out the gate, maybe I'm missing things and I'm not like into Rockies Twitter. And I'm sure that there are Rockies diehards who are like, have been very frustrated with this organization. That's not what I'm saying. But to like see that moment, to see Bryant like booed at the home opener feels to me, Rockies fans, email us, let me know if I'm wrong, feels to me like a level that this fan base hasn't gotten to. And like the fan base needs to like show ownership that the current state of play is not sustainable in order for any real change to happen. And I don't want to say booing Chris Bryant is the way to do that, but I think it did highlight a level of discontent that is incredibly, incredibly legitimate. Maybe more legitimate than any other fan base in baseball.
Yeah, totally fine. The Rockies have a 7.50 team ERA. A park adjusted for Coors Field, 62 ERA plus, far and away the worst in the league. This is not me telling you to go boo the pitchers. It's just like Chris Bryant, you know, hitting 100 is not helping, but he's not the problem. So it is unfortunate, but I still agree with your general point. Like, yes, we've said that, you know, the only way the Rockies are going to figure it out is if the fans get pissed and stop going to the games. Again, I'm not going to tell fans to boycott or not to go to games, like live your life. And people are going to go to Rockies games anyway, because it's a great time, but it's just, it's so unfortunate. The Rays, let's see. Their pitching has also looked shaky so far at times, but we'll flush the weekend in Colorado and see how they do in more neutral.
They won standing. The series.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm just okay. Saying, you know, their pitching numbers are not as sterling as we would have expected in the early going. The Giants take a series over the Padres. first of all, I'm just in on the Giants. Pick them to go to the playoffs. I have seen enough good things happening with their additions. We haven't even seen Blake Snell pitch yet. I just think they added too many good baseball players. I think Chung Hooley's look great. Jordan Hicks looks fantastic. We'll see how long that lasts. But I just like a lot of what they have going on. I'm not saying they're going to challenge the Dodgers. I just think they look like a good baseball team. Whereas the Padres, I know they also had a lot of turnover. And unfortunately, it's more of the same with a lot of new characters. I don't think they're doomed. I don't think they're going to be objectively bad. I think they'll hang around. I still think I'm more optimistic this year than last year, even when it was going bad. But I don't know. That's where I'm at on these two teams right now, because we will be, you know, comparing them a lot.
I want to give a special mention to Logan Webb. His pitching line on Sunday was just spectacular. This is the pitching line that should, like, go on Logan Webb's tombstone or his Hall of Fame plaque. 7 innings, 10 hits, 2 runs, both earned, no walks, 3 Ks, no homers, 85 pitches in 70 innings. If we build the whole ship out of Logan Webb, we will never have an elbow injury again. I will say, if Logan Webb ever needs Tommy John surgery, I give up. Then we're done. Like, this is what we want pitchers to be. He is doing it. He is succeeding at it. And if he goes kablooey, then I will have to question everything I know on this planet.
Yeah. Last thing on this. They do not play again, because they've already played twice. They already, you know, had the opening series. They do not play again until September. September 6th will be the next time the Giants and Padres play each other. So if they're gonna battle each other in the standings, it will not involve games against one another. All right, Jake. Well, it looks like we're running out of time. I guess we can't talk too much about the Brewers and the Mariners. The Mariners offense. Okay. Hey, good news and bad news. Good news and bad news, Jake.
Yeah.
The bad news is that the Mariners offense looks terrible, and the defense terrible. Looks terrible. The good news is that if I have permanent eye damage from staring at the eclipse for too long, I won't have to watch this team struggle to score runs or play defense anymore for the rest of the season.
Congrats.
Just kidding. Congrats. That would be terrible. Obviously, the Mariners will still be on my television, and I'll be watching them after I wear proper eye protection during the eclipse this afternoon. Basically, yeah, their offense is completely disjointed. The defense is a mess. The pitching outside of Bryce Miller, who looked incredible on Saturday, has not been exactly what it should be. They now head to Toronto, a team that we didn't really acknowledge a few minutes ago talking about that series. Good vibe check here for Toronto and Seattle, with both offenses kind of stuck in the mud. So we will see. That series will have a large impact on the morale of both fan bases.
The Mariners being only 4-6 despite this horrible start is a huge W for them. Like, this has not been a 4-6 true quality start. Like, I understand Mariners fans are frustrated right now. I get it. But thank those lucky stars that you are not 1-9 or whatever the hell.
Yeah, that's what it's looked like. I agree.
We'll have more on the Brewers this week after you see them in person. Red Sox over Angels. This was a pretty fun series, I have to say. Both of these teams have better records than you think. And we'll kind of wait to see how things play out. But the thing that we were wrong about, and I think we acknowledged this already last week, the Red Sox pitching is going to be better than we thought it was. These people know how to find outs. Like, great example. They will find outs. Cutter Crawford has looked superb for them in the rotation.
Hauk looks unreal.
Yeah. Like, these pitchers look amazing. I think they might have, like, the best run differential in baseball.
Well, they have the lowest ERA in baseball. They have a 1.49 ERA through 10 games. And it's – and, you know, some of the bullpen pieces have looked nasty as well. Now, it is just interesting. It's like, okay, let's say Lucas was healthy. Not only were we looking forward to seeing what Lucas would be – you know, would look like, But where would he slot in, right? You know, Whitlock's the one that kind of got elevated. Bayo's been their worst pitcher so far, which is kind of funny. And he's, of course, their opening day starter who they just extended. Now on offense, some concerns. Trevor Story, serious shoulder injury, diving for a ball over the weekend. I don't know. You know, they call up David Hamilton. He'll, you know, be batting ninth for them. He hits a home run, his first career home run. Of course, they have, you know, Marcelo Meyer. I don't think they're going to rush him because of the Story injury. Offense, we're still trying to see what we have from this Red Sox offense, because Casas has yet to get going. Devers has been good. O'Neill's been tremendous, right? So the outfield has looked about as good as you could possibly hope with O'Neill and Duran. But if the pitching is going to be this good, then they're going to be in the mix. Like, there's really no way around that. And the offense just needs to be a little bit more balanced, a little bit more consistent. But losing Story, especially with the injuries he's already dealt with, to a fluke thing like this, is just sucks for him, sucks for the team, and we'll see how they replace him. The Angels are not that bad. I don't think they're good, but they are not that bad. That's kind of where I'm at with them. Like, I think they're another team where they have a few pitchers that I'm like feeling good about, but like, look at this. I mean, this obviously Rendon's been atrocious, Hicks has been atrocious. Chanuel, God bless him and his on-base streak that got ended because MLB made a stupid scoring decision. He has two.
It
hits.
Was not a hit. It was. I'm sorry. Like,
no, I know.
Let's talk on this for a second. I want to talk about this. Nolan Chanuel had a long on-base streak that folded in from last year. That is a great example of something that like a fan base cares a lot about and should care a lot about, because it is something to care about when your team is not particularly good. However, is it weird that MLB went back and changed this decision? Yes, undeniably very bizarre. The play itself is an error. It is an error on the play. The pitcher drops the baseball. And MLB has been an abomination over the last two seasons with scoring decisions of being way too like inclined to call things hits and not errors. And so I'm struggling from like a neutral perspective to say, like, this should be a hit. Like, make this is an error. It's weird that they went back and changed it. Doesn't bother me too much. But it should bother an Angels fan.
Yeah, that's fine. Also, like, Nolan Chanuel, I am rooting for you. I hope you have a long, successful career. If that was a hit, that would have been his third hit of the season. He's hitting 080. Okay? So, like, and that's good. He's getting on base. He's still walking, and that's good. There's other ways to be successful. But, like, I'm still looking at this offense, and I'm like, you know, Neto's a bit of a slow starter. Trout has looked great, but if Hicks and Drury has been terrible and Neto, like, this is still a very uneven baseball team. Same kind of thing, though. Say reverse of the Mariners. You're 5-4? Hell love yeah. It. Like, you should feel awesome.
That's good stuff, like,
good,
man.
Good for Wash. You're 5-4. Keep it going. Keep it going.
Cubs over Dodgers. Imanaga, awesome on Sunday. Yamamoto, very good on Saturday in that game. Otani homering on the Friday game, but the Cubs winning a long one. Did you see anything about Yamamoto on the tarp?
I did not. I missed this.
Oh, my God. So one of our favorite Twitter accounts, I think, is Director of Morale, Dom Frederick on Twitter. It is like, very few Twitter accounts make me laugh as consistently. I think it is like the best example of how to be an unhinged fan, where you are like so pro Cubs, but in a way that is, I find it incredibly endearing, and I have nothing but respect for this.
I mean, to me, it's like, and you know, he's had some bad takes here and there, but
it's a great hit rate. It's a great hit rate. So there was a picture of Yamamoto. Yeah, there's a picture of Yamamoto like feeling around the mound, like walking on the Wrigley Field mound. The Dodgers tweeted out like getting a feel of Wrigley Field, but like the tarp is on the mound and Yamamoto is on it in cleats, right? And if you've ever played baseball at any level, you know that you do not wear spikes on a tarp. And so Dom was basically just like disrespectful behavior here. Yamamoto walking on our tarps with metal spikes after it's been raining here for a week and the crew's working their tails to get these games in, and you're on our goddamn tarp with cleats. This isn't some ballpark. It's a federal landmark. Respect Dan Kiermaier, who is the groundskeeper. It's just like, it's awesome. This is a great like origin story for
our beef. Tarp.
Our tarp. If these two teams play in October and we get like Cubs fans booing Yamamoto because he walked on the tarp on April 5th, like, hell yeah. That is awesome, stupid baseball beef.
Yeah, so we had some, I mean, I know the Cubs, you know, win this series, there's some definitely some crappy weather, but Dodgers offense is still pretty good. Last two series, the A's over the Tigers. I'm just going to say this. This is a bizarre stat. Okay, this is from Evan Woodbury, Tigers beat reporter. The last time the Tigers won a home series against the A's was April 25th, 2016. The Tigers are 4-21 in their last 25 games against the A's in the last, 8 years. Now, here's the thing about this. It's a reminder that the A's were not the worst team in baseball not that long ago. So that's the first thing.
They were good
this year. Yeah, they were good. They were great. They're a great team. Well, the Tigers were ass, right? The Tigers have been one of the worst teams. So in that sense, it's not that surprising. However, this series, this is the opposite of the White Sox Royals thing where it's like, okay, Royals, you're serious? You mean business? Kick the White Sox ass. Tigers, you mean business? You got the A's coming for your first home series? You should kick their ass too. That's not what happened. But it's 1 week, so we're going to be okay. Speaking of bad baseball teams, but hey, they finally won. The Miami Marlins getting their first dub of the year on Sunday, avoiding the 0-10 start. They are 1-9. Jazz homer, Nick Gordon homer, Kyle Gibson getting blasted, still going six innings. That's what we're talking about. You mentioned Logan Webb. We need more Kyle Gibsons. Kyle Gibson's still going to make it to 200 innings. Just watch. Cardinals took the series, though. Marlins, obviously, in shambles. They are very bad. We already talked about them earlier this week. And I think we should end with some Marlins talk. Cardinals, by the way, what is their record? Because they obviously haven't necessarily started particularly hot. They're 5-5. Again, it's fine. It's fine. They got the Phillies coming to town this week. That'll be an interesting series for both teams. But let's talk about the Marlins, because that is the last bit of news we wanted to address here on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbercast, which is the news that Skip Schumacher's option for the 2025 season has been voided. My understanding is this was a club option, but from your understanding of kind of being around Skip and just kind of following the story, this is a situation where it's not that shocking because, listen, we got a new front office coming in. Kim Ng and Skip Schumacher were very much, you know, in lockstep. Now Peter Bendix comes in. There's a whole new front office. Skip is still there. The Marlins are bad. Will Skip manage out the season? I assume so. But it seems like this is a mutual preliminary parting of ways.
I don't think that Skip wants to be the manager of the 2025 Miami Marlins. By broadcasting that right now in a way that is, you know, good communication, but also not disrespectful, I think, to the players, he is saying, like, hey, 29 other teams, like, I'm available, like, I'm good at this. Give me a call come, you know, hey, October, Cubs, not November.
If you're unsatisfied Cubs with Craig Counsell, I'm ready to go. If you want to buy him out like he's a college football coach and keep paying him millions and millions of dollars to be your manager, like, I'm ready to go.
Skip Schumacher jet watch this winter is going to be outstanding. But yeah, like, Skip is definitely good at this thing, and the Marlins are going in a different direction. They are going to be bad before they are good again, in my opinion. And I think that Skip does not want to endure that, nor should he want to, because he is talented enough and gave enough to this organization and this team over the last year that he should have the ability to be like, thanks, but no thanks. I have no issue with that at all. And I expect him to be managing a Major League Baseball team, a different one at this time next year. And I think that this news just kind of highlights the likelihood that that will happen. And that's where I'm at on that.
All right, we're done. We'll be back on Wednesday. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We'll do a little Fantasy League update on Wednesday. Maya did not have a great first week, unfortunately.
1-0, baby!
But I think I won the fielding percentage category, so I'm feeling good about that. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing this podcast, as always. Congrats to Yankees fan Andrew on the series win to open the home slate for the Bronx Bombers. I'm sure we'll give him crap about roll call as soon as we get off this podcast. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you all on Wednesday. Bye-bye.